going home from a goth club with a couple of hot swingers and immediately being murdered, Taylor.
And I'm David Bowie in middle-aged makeup, looking so distressingly like Paul Bettany, Jemmy. And just to peek behind the curtain, listeners, the first time I told Taylor that intro, it gave her a crisis.
It did.
To continue our Valentine's Day celebration, Valentine's Month, if you will, celebration, with the only way we can with problematic bisexual vampires, we watched 1983's The Hunger, directed by Tony Scott, starring Catherine Deneuve, David Bowie, and Susan Sarandon. Just, God, I know we say this about every fucking movie that we review, but it's the movie ever.
I will say, I not only support women's rights, I do support women's wrongs.
God forbid women do anything. You can listen to our episode on Multiverse of Madness. We do support women's wrongs on this podcast.
Also, Hello Mary Lou, we also support women's wrongs in that episode.
Exactly. We have a long, storied history of supporting women's wrongs on this podcast, and let that be what we're known for, honestly. Let that be our cornerstone. Supporting women's wrongs.
Mm-hmm. This is a movie about a woman who does a lot of wrongs, and yeah. I think that she was correct to do them.
We'll get into it. Oh God, trigger warning. This whole movie is about vampires as a metaphor for AIDS. So it's not subtle. And if that is at all distressing to you, please skip this one.
Yep.
And but other than that, like murder.
Implied grooming question
mark?
Implied
grooming question mark. We're not really sure what's going on there.
It's very vague, but the implication is that a teenage character is being groomed. Violence, animal violence, and also
animal violence.
But like,
animal,
this is a horror podcast.
Yeah, animal violence, animal death. Pretty
graphic
gruesome.
Animal death.
Yeah, really gruesome animal death, actually.
It's very gross. I can't think of anything else,
yeah,
though.
I probably should start writing these down as I'm watching the movie, but I didn't do that this time because I'm an idiot. Anyway, Taylor, what are your memories with this movie?
I was actually introduced to this film through a YouTuber, Elisa Hansen, who also known as Maven of the Eventide. She does like vampire themed reviews and YouTube videos. And so I remember first hearing about this movie from her, and it influenced me to seek it out, and I loved it. And I haven't watched it since then. And I'm really shocked that I didn't, because it's so for me.
Yeah, this movie is very for Taylor.
In the same way that something like Dracula 80 1972 is so for me, like, this is the 80s version of that.
There's one in every decade.
It's true. Once a decade, there comes a film that is for me.
It's a shame that the 2021 already happened. The 2020s already happened with Last Night in Soho.
It's true. What about you? I think this was your first time watching this movie.
This was my first time watching this movie. However, I was vaguely familiar with it because I was familiar with the season of American Horror Story that this is. Like, this borrows heavily from American Horror Story Hotel, where there are fangless vampires that, like, the opening of American Horror Story Hotel that introduces you to the vampires is literally them going out, seducing a goth couple, coming back home and killing them. So It's just the hunger, but instead of an allegory for AIDS, vampires in that are an allegory for addiction.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, it's honestly one of the better seasons of American Horror Story, in my opinion. Like, the ones that I like are, like, I mean, I think Murder House is well written, but I don't particularly like it. It's probably the tightest season. I'm just giving my American Horror Story opinions now.
You are a Ryan Murphy scholar.
I am a Ryan Murphy scholar, unfortunately.
I haven't seen that season of American Horror Story, but I do like that they took inspiration from this movie because it's baller and I love it.
Yeah, it borrows like heavily from this movie. I was watching this movie the whole time and I was like, oh, cool. This is just American Horror Story Hotel, only like made by not Ryan Murphy, which makes it better.
Oh my God. You know what's really funny? Tony Scott, who directed this movie, are you familiar with his other work? Do you know what he's like?
No.
You know what movie he directed? Top Gun.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
This was his debut movie, and then he basically spent the rest of his career making, like, action movies.
That's so funny.
Very, like, stylish action movies. Like, Top Gun is a very visually interesting movie, but, like...
It's so fucking funny, though.
Tonally, it's very different. Other than both being, like, very stylish and well-made on just, like, a filmmaking level, does not have much in common with any of his other work, which I find very interesting. Like, how do you start out with The Hunger and then you're like, and Top Gun?
Yeah, like, that's quite a jump in your career. I mean, he has the range.
I guess the connective thread is just gay stuff.
Yeah, the connective thread is gay stuff.
This movie is gay, you guys.
It's really gay.
Like,
it's
actually really textually gay. Like, there's a gay sex scene in the movie. It's great.
Yeah. Shall I give us the plot of this film, Taylor?
Yes, please do.
John is the lover of the gorgeous immortal vampire Miriam, and he's been led to believe that he'll live forever, too. Unfortunately, he quickly deteriorates into a horrible living death, and Miriam seeks out a new companion. She sets her sights on Sarah, a lovely young scientist, who quickly falls under Miriam's spell. However, Sarah doesn't warm up to the concept of vampirism easily, leading to conflict with Miriam, which is a very light way of describing what happens between the two of them, but okay. Conflict, yeah.
Conflict.
Conflict. God, where to fucking start with this movie?
Man, I love gay people.
I love gay vampires, except all vampires are gay. So I love all vampires.
Yeah. I think it's really funny that, like, a lot of the discussion about this movie is like, oh, it's, you know, it's David Bowie and Susan Sarandon and Catherine Deneuve in a sort of bisexual love triangle movie. David Bowie's not really in it.
Yeah, for most of the film. I was surprised. I thought it was going to be like a whole, like, sexy, because I was waiting for them to, like, reverse David Bowie's aging so that he and, like,
no.
He and Miriam and Sarah could have sexy times, but nope. He
withers.
Withers. Can we talk about how vampires in this are doomed to, like, the thing that scares me the most?
He becomes the yes, honey, Wojak.
No, it's not that. It's, like, the idea of, like, and there used to be, like, a creepypasta that would go around about this concept, about, like, being dead but not being, like, but still being conscious. So, like, you're just down there in your fucking coffin forever.
Yeah, it's really freaky.
Like, that scares the shit out of me. I could never survive that. I would survive maybe, like, 10 minutes of that before just going absolutely insane.
I mean, to be fair, all of Miriam's, I guess, former companions, paramours, lovers, whatever you want to call them, they seem, like, pretty fucking torn up about it.
Well, yeah, of course. I'm not saying that they wouldn't be. I'm just saying that, like, specifically for me, like, my brain goes so fast,
yeah,
that I would just be like, oh god, I can't, like, be down here without stimulus for that long. Probably something I should talk to a psychiatrist about, but we're not gonna do that.
I find this scene where John is waiting in the waiting room of the hospital to be genuinely fucking horrific.
Where he looks the most like Paul Bettany, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I hate that you said that to me.
I was trying not to say it to you during the movie, but, like, I can't not say it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He does, though. He does. But, like, I find it so scary how quickly he just cycles through the age. Like, he's starting to age, and then over the course of 2 hours, he becomes an elderly man.
Yeah, he goes from, like, 40 to 80 in, like, 2 hours. It's pretty fucking horrible.
Yeah, it's really scary. And then when Sarah is, like, leaving after her meeting, he, like, catches her in the hallway, and that's the thing that makes her believe that this is real, is that, you know, 2 hours ago, this guy looked a lot younger.
Mm-hmm. Way to go, Sarah. You fucked it up.
Yeah. Fucked it all up, Sarah. I mean, how much help could she really have been?
Not really, but still.
I love and respect Sarah. I mean, listen, women's wrongs, Miriam is always doing women's wrongs, but Sarah does some good old-fashioned women's wrongs at the end of this film, too.
Oh, she absolutely does. And then she goes to live in Paris with her, like, new lovers. Good for her.
Which I love for her. Like, again, women's wrongs.
Good for her.
I'm so interested in the way that vampirism works in this story.
I'm so interested in that. I'm also so fucking interested in Miriam because, like, yes, she's doing, like, these horrific things. But at the same time, like, you sit there and you think, like, well, what else is she supposed to do? Like, she's this immortal being who is never going to die. And, like, she's still, like, human. She gets lonely. Like, how can you, like, really, like, just think of, like, I don't know, man. I had coherent thoughts written down, and I did not read them there. But yeah.
It just makes me so sad, the way that Miriam feels like if she presented herself as she is, she would never be able to find somebody to love her.
Mm-hmm.
So she has to deceive and trick these people into allowing her to infect them with vampirism, and also not telling them that the form of vampirism that she passes on to them is only gonna keep you young looking for about 300 years or so before you start to fucking deteriorate.
And it's gonna go real quick.
It's gonna go really bad. Like, she's the only one who is young, yeah, forever. Somebody takes her place.
Yeah.
Like Sarah does at the end of the film.
Good for her.
Good for her.
Good for her.
God, that final thing of, you know, not only Sarah, you know, in her new sexy life becoming the new Miriam as it is, but Miriam locked in that coffin screaming out for Sarah. Her.
Oh my God.
It's so sad. This vicarious thing of, like, well, this is what you've done to so many people.
Yeah, like, girl, you can't say you didn't have it coming.
Yeah. God. God. This is a sad movie.
Vampires, man.
This is a sad, tragic movie. People give Interview with the Vampire 91 or 90, whenever that movie came out, a lot of credit for the, like, Hollywood sad vampires. Obviously, Anne Rice had published the novel in the 70s, but I'm talking, like, on film. Mm-hmm. But this movie is...
This movie did it way before that. Yeah. Like 10 years before that.
Mm-hmm. So,
a whole decade.
The Hunger Solos.
Truly. Where were vampires, like, in the cultural consciousness at this point? I have to wonder.
Lost Boys was 87.
Yeah.
So we were not quite at Lost Boys yet. I think we were still in that kind of, like, post-Hammer, not quite sure what we're doing with vampires era.
Yeah.
Which makes this movie all the more interesting.
Yeah, it really does, because it's doing something so new with the idea of vampirism. And, like, vampirism has taken, like, so many meanings over the course. Like, people have read so many different things, and it's come to symbolize so many different things to people, and to see, like, this kind of take on it is really, really interesting. Especially since, like, I guess it's, like, vampirism as a disease is probably more common, like, nowadays, but I have to imagine back then it wasn't really done. I have to imagine this is one of the first movies to explore it in that sort of way.
Yeah, I love the idea of, like you said, vampirism is a disease, but also having one of the main characters be a scientist who is able to, like, I mean, listen, I don't really understand a lot of what the scientist characters are talking about, but to my layman's perspective, it does seem like this movie is grounded in some sort of very heightened reality.
Mm-hmm. Actually, American Horror Story Hotel kind of did that. They didn't have, like, they didn't ground it in real reality because it's fucking American Horror Story, but they also had vampirism as, like, a disease or, like, an infection.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. I haven't seen it in a long time.
I also really enjoy the scene where the other scientists are, like, able to know that something is wrong with Sarah by looking at her blood. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, because it's two different kinds of blood in mm-hmm. her system. And one of them is like, don't they just say it's like animal blood or it's not human blood?
Yeah, which is so fucking crazy.
It's bisexual blood.
Speaking of bisexuality, we need to have a horny minute.
Let's have a horny minute. Holy shit.
Susan Sarandon is so fucking hot in this movie.
Susan Sarandon, fucking Catherine, I can't pronounce her last name, MILF legend.
Oh my god.
Like, oh my god.
And of course David Bowie before he gets gross.
Yeah, of course David Bowie for like the few scenes before he starts getting gross.
David Bowie in the first 10 minutes of the film, also serving snack, but like, mm-hmm. yeah. Susan Sarandon, I'm obsessed with her haircut in this movie.
I literally made a note that if a woman has that short, curly 80s haircut, she's got to be at least queer-coded.
Yeah. No, least. For sure.
At least. Like, if you see an 80s woman and... if you see an 80s movie and the woman has, like, a short, curly haircut, like, she's gay. Like, I'm sorry.
She is.
Gay. Assigned gay by haircut.
And she is certainly gay in this movie. God.
Hey, Taylor, is she... You know.
You know.
Afflicted by the curse of the Draculas.
Yes, she is.
Yes, she is. She absolutely is. 100%.
You know, speaking of the gay stuff in the movie, I do have a fun behind the scenes fact.
Please do. Please tell me you're about to say that this is the movie that turned Susan Sarandon bisexual.
No, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was. I just before I get into this fun fact, I do find it very, very funny that the one character out of the three leads in this movie who has sex with a man and a woman over the course of the film is the only one not played by a bisexual actor.
I know.
Catherine Deneuve, the lone straight person. Meanwhile, Susan Sarandon and David Bowie, who are not, they're not playing... It's just funny. It's just funny to me.
It's very funny. Well, David Bowie's playing bisexual, if only because he's playing a vampire.
Yeah, if only because it's David Bowie and every character that he plays is intrinsically...
Also, vampires are intrinsically gay. So
that's
it's like,
true, too.
It's like a double team kind yes. of deal.
Wink, wink.
I hate it.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
No, but the... So I was reading about some behind-the-scenes stuff for this movie, and apparently, in the original script for the film, the scene where... Sarah and Miriam sleep together was supposed to be preceded during, like, you know, the bit where Miriam is like playing the piano and kind of trying to seduce Sarah.
Yeah, kind of having the Carol moment. Yeah,
it's so sexy, by the way. I would be 100% like seduced by that.
When is it my turn to wander into the home of a rich MILF who is probably a vampire and get seduced? When is it my turn to be happy?
Oh my god, when she's telling her about the backstory of the song and Sarah goes, is it a love song? And she goes, it's sung by two women. And Sarah goes, sounds like a love song.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god.
The riz on that woman. The riz on that woman.
Oh.
Yeah. But,
horny moment over.
So during that scene in the original script, the idea was that Miriam was going to be like, plying Sarah with alcohol, like it was going to be very like overtly predatory.
Uh-huh.
And so she was supposed to be like, you know, kind of lots of shots of her like refilling her drink, and it was sort of implied that Sarah wouldn't have slept with her had she not been sort of giving her lots and lots of alcohol.
Uh-huh.
And Susan Sarandon objected to this because in her words, nobody, regardless of their sexuality, would ever need to be coerced into sleeping with Catherine Deneuve.
That is so fucking true. She's so real for that.
She's a fucking real one. Like, T.
She's so real for that. She's correct.
Yeah. So she, like, she got them to just change it to have it be 100% consensual because she was like, I don't see why Sarah wouldn't just be down.
That's bisexual rights.
And to be fair, T, she's correct for that.
That was fighting for bisexual rights and people were killed.
Oh my god, I saw a clip of her recently just fully saying the words, I'm bisexual, on some talk show interview. And this was like recent and I was like, oh, slay. I don't think I've ever actually heard her say the words before.
Good for her.
Like, I knew that she had, like, had relationships with women, but I had never actually heard her say the words, I'm bisexual. And then I heard her, and I was like, oh, okay. Cool.
Good for her.
Slay, Susan. But yeah, I think that's very funny.
It's extremely funny. Good for her.
Another fun thing, Susan Sarandon obviously plays Sarah, and her sort of boyfriend-ish guy she works with slash boyfriend Tom is played by an actor named Cliff DeYoung. Obviously, Susan Sarandon played Janet in the Rocky Horror Picture Show,
yes.
And Cliff DeYoung played Brad in the sequel to the Rocky Horror Picture Show called Shock Treatment.
That's so funny.
So they played Brad and Janet, but not in the same movie.
Not in the same movie. That's so funny.
I find that very fun. I like that.
It's very good.
I don't know if they did that on purpose, but I hope they did.
Can we talk about some of the practical effects in this movie?
Yeah. Please. Because they slay.
They do slay. The old age makeup on David Bowie, until it starts getting, like, cartoonishly ghoulish, which, of course it does, it's a horror movie. But, like, at first, when it's, like, subtle, it looks really fucking good.
Yeah, the bits at the beginning when he's first starting to age, and he's, like, looking in the mirror and sort of seeing, like, the more subtle wrinkles, like, around his eyes and stuff, mm-hmm. like, does not look too dissimilar from David Bowie in late middle age in real life when he actually reached that age.
Yeah.
They did a good job.
They did, even if he did look distressingly like Paul Bettany.
Even if he did look a lot like Paul Bettany, yeah.
But then, you know, of course it starts getting, like, cartoonishly ghoulish, but even then it looks cool.
I really respect David Bowie's commitment to never covering up his enlarged pupil in any movies.
Yes. He has two different color eyes. Too, right? Or is that...
No, I think one eye just looks darker because...
Oh, the pupils, yeah.
Yeah, one of the pupils is, like, bigger. It's some sort of, like, I think he had, like, an injury or something when he was young. I don't know. I really respect that anytime I've ever seen him in a movie, he's yeah. like, no, not covering that up. My character just looks like this. Respect.
Good for him.
Good for him. God, he's also, hot.
Also, the fucking... Like, the decaying monkey corpse.
That was so gross.
So fucking nasty, but also so fucking cool.
Dude, the stop motion on that was fucking phenomenal.
So good. Like, of course you can, like, tell it's stop motion, but also, like, you would believe that it wasn't stop motion.
Yeah. I also really love good. The way that the sequence of the monkey deteriorating is intercut with John deteriorating in the waiting yes. room. It's fucking way, brilliant.
The same way that it's the beginning of the movie is intercut with the monkey going fucking feral and
yes.
Miriam and Jonathan killing people.
They are also going feral in their own way.
Which, by the way, oh to be a hot yeah. goth girl... being taken home by two sexy vampires who are going to kill me.
Literally, like, again, when is it my turn to be happy?
When is it my turn? That's all I can think of when I watch these fucking vampire movies. Is like, when is it my turn?
Literally.
When do I get to be them?
I think it's really interesting that the vampires in the universe of The Hunger do not have fangs. I love yes. that.
That's another thing that American Horror Story took. Instead of the Ankh necklaces, they have, like, gloves that have, like, a claw on them, and they use the claw to...
Oh, interesting.
It's cool.
I think it also, like, really fits into the idea of vampirism as a disease rather than, like, an overtly supernatural thing,
mm-hmm.
Because I feel like the fangs are sort of the point where if that were to be part of the lore of these vampires, it would break from that.
Yeah.
Like, just a little bit.
Yeah, there's no disease that makes your teeth, like, long and sharp.
Yeah, like, even the immortality I could buy as a symptom. I mean, like, you know, they talk about a degenerative disease that actually does exist in real people, where people rapidly age, mm-hmm. starting from when they're children.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, it's a little bit of a stretch, but it's not a super big stretch to imagine that something like this could be a naturally occurring blood disease.
Right.
I just think it's cool that they wear cool necklaces that they cut people open with and drink their blood.
It's very sexy.
I also think it's fun that Sarah's boyfriend, like, realizes that she has the curse of the Draculas because she has the necklace.
Yeah, and he's like, she met you for, like, 3 hours and she gave you a gift? Like, yeah,
yeah,
man,
he was like, you just met her today.
Like, yeah, man, lesbians, U-Haul. Just kidding, they're both bi, but you know what I mean.
Woolawoo be U-Hauling.
Sapphics be U-Hauling.
It's true, they do be. As evident by this film, because she met Sarah, like, once and then was immediately like, need her.
I don't blame her.
I don't blame her either. Again, we've discussed, Susan Sarandon is so hot. God, can we talk about the scene where John kills Alice?
Yes.
That's harrowing. That scene is so harrowing.
Oh my god. Just, like, the slow buildup of tension.
It's such perfect tension building, and it's so, again, we've talked about this on this podcast before, but it's so, like, Hitchcock bomb under the table.
Oh, yeah.
Of, like, we the audience know that something is so fucked up and wrong here, but Alice has no idea.
Yeah, Alice just thinks that she's meeting, like, oh, the Jonathan Miriam's, like, old guy friend, or possibly Jonathan's father.
I think it's really funny that she keeps commenting about how much he looks like John, and he's like, I'm not John! Or, like, I'm not John's father!
It's like, yeah, man.
Poor guy.
You sure aren't.
I mean, poor guy, he kills people, but, like, you know what I mean.
Poor little meow meow.
He is a poor little meow meow.
Listen, we've said poor X about, like, other murderers. It's fine.
They're not real. We're allowed to say it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, I mean, but also it's like, maybe don't go in there with a stranger.
Yeah.
I know it was 1983, but also, like, maybe don't.
It was the 80s. Kids were running around in the sewers. It's fine.
Kids were building dams in the sewers.
Kids were building dams in the barrens.
God.
We'll get there one of these
days. Get there. I just, even for the 80s, I find it a little strange.
Yeah, you'd think they'd at least teach basic stranger danger, you know?
If your piano teacher is not there, what does she play, the violin?
She plays piano, he plays cello, then Alice plays violin.
Violin, yeah. If your violin teachers are not home and there's a strange old man in their apartment, maybe just, like, come back later?
Yeah, maybe just, like, leave.
He's like, maybe they're not home. And she's like, okay, I'm gonna come in to leave a note.
Like, maybe go build a dam.
Yeah, this is the point at which you build a dam in New York City.
Exactly. You know, famous for its dams.
Yeah. We all know. We all know about that classic childhood pastime that we all had in New York City where we built dams.
Yeah. I will say, are you really a vampire unless you play some kind of sexy instrument?
This is true. I also love the little flashbacks to John and Miriam first meeting.
Yes.
And I love the idea that Miriam was attracted to John because of his love of music.
Yeah.
Listen, it goes back to how, like, she does so much fucked up shit, but she really is such a tragic character because you see it in the way that she doesn't just, I mean, obviously she chooses David Bowie and Susan Sarandon, like, obviously looks are a factor, but, like, she's not shallow, you know? She admires Sarah's intelligence, she admires John's love of music. She picks people that she has stuff in common with. She just wants a companion. She wants someone to live her life with. She's so sad and pathetic. She's a poor little meow meow.
She is a poor little meow meow. Oh my god. For as much as she is, like, the sexy vampire MILF, like, she is so
sad.
She's
pathetic.
She's so sad. She's so pathetic. She just wants someone to, like, spend her immortality with. And she can't have that because she never actually turns anyone.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that, like, the scene where John is, like, at that point, he's, like, cartoonishly old.
Yeah.
But it is still so sad when he's begging her to fix him, and she's sobbing, and she's like, I can't do it.
And then, like, you know, goes from begging her to fix him to begging sorry, yeah, begging her to fix him to begging her to fucking kill him.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, once fixing him is out of the question, the next best thing to do is to just let him die.
Yeah.
Because otherwise...
She can't do that. That's the saddest part about it, honestly, is she can't even, like, grant them mercy at the end.
No, she can't even put these poor people out of their misery.
All she can do is, like, stuff them in a box and keep them all together.
Yeah. In her weird little coffin room.
In her weird, you know, is it really a house unless you have a weird little coffin room?
Oh, to have.
Interview with a Vampire has taught us this very well. You need to have a little coffin room.
Yeah, exactly. Are you even a vampire unless you have a weird little coffin room?
I think every house should come with a weird little coffin room.
A house is not a home without a little coffin room. And we can put that on a t-shirt.
We can put that on a t-shirt. oh, God.
God. But yeah, it really is just the saddest thing in the world. This is a movie about a bunch of really sad people.
Yeah. It's yeah. Also because this is a movie where vampirism is an allegory for AIDS. And that's
yeah, you want to talk about that?
I think we're a half hour into the episode, Taylor. I think we should probably hit the crux of the matter.
Yeah. Oof. Is this a movie about AIDS?
Ooh, getting a disease that will slowly waste you away by, you know, having sex and exchanging blood. Like, yeah, man. Movie about AIDS.
Movie about AIDS. It's also just this, like, it's so, I don't know if definitive is the right word, but it is this, like, it's this very tragic thing of, like, you know, PrEP doesn't exist yet at this point in time. Like, there's no real way to protect yourself from AIDS. People are dying from it by the scoreful. Mm-hmm. And so it's, like, this horrible tragedy about a person who cannot experience intimacy without infecting somebody.
Yeah.
And, like, that is, I mean, thank fucking God we, you know, have measures now that people can, you know, like, we have things like PrEP and things like, to be able to have whole, healthy, fulfilling lives with HIV and with AIDS. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Fortify is maybe the word you want to use.
Fortify is probably a better word.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, 1983,
you're screwed.
Yeah, like, you're fucked. Like, again, like, people are just dying, and there's no way to help. It was a terrifying time.
All you can do is just watch people fade away.
And, like, that's the saddest thing for a character like Miriam. Like, again, there's nothing she can do. If she wants to have a whole, fulfilling life with a partner, like, this is the fate that people are resigned to. And it's just, it's so fucking sad, man.
And it is, like, this question of, like, well, I mean, obviously, if you have AIDS, like, you can't, like... Like, what are you supposed to do, though?
Yeah.
Like, how, like, you are human. You, or, I mean, you're maybe you're a vampire, but...
like sometimes you if still, you're Miriam, you're a vampire, but...
Yeah, you still feel that loneliness.
Maybe saying you're a person is a better...
You're a person. There we go. You're a person. Like, you still feel that loneliness. You still want to have a connection with another person. You want to love. You want to be loved. And... You can't do that without dooming the person that you want to try and have this connection with. It's real sad,
yeah,
man.
You know, some people might say that this film is, like, maybe offensive is the wrong word, but, like, that it portrays people with HIV or AIDS as, like, predators. And maybe on the surface, you could say that it kind of does, but I think that that is missing a lot of the tragedy of Miriam as a character if you just are like, well, she's just sort of a one-note predator character.
Yeah, because the movie doesn't present her that way. They do present her sympathetically in the movie.
Yeah, she's, like, very complex.
Yeah.
She's not the... I mean, she's in her way, she is the antagonist, but I wouldn't call her a villain.
Exactly.
She makes me sad.
She's real sad, man.
I love Miriam. Women's wrongs.
She's never done anything wrong in her life.
She makes me very sad. And Catherine Deneuve is so fucking wonderful in this role. And I really respect that she committed really hard to this role. And also, like, listen, not afraid of portraying a gay character at a very scary time for gay people in America. And Susan Sarandon, yeah, too. Like, you know, things were getting better for gay people. And then the AIDS crisis happened.
And then Reagan happened.
Yeah, and then Reagan and the AIDS crisis and all of that. Like, 80s was a scary time to be gay in America. And even in, like, a quote-unquote silly little vampire movie, you know, it is really nice to see actors and writers committing to having gay characters, not just because of the time period, but also, like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of the time with movies that use supernatural things as a metaphor for real social problems, they get bogged down in the weeds of, like, well, there are no actual gay people in this story.
Mm-hmm.
But there are gay people in The Hunger.
Yeah, there's a whole lesbian sex scene.
And it's wonderful. And not just because Catherine Deneuve and Susan Sarandon are hot, although they are.
They're very hot.
It's a great scene. Lots of billowy curtains in that scene.
Yeah, lots of billowy curtains, lots of
soft fades.
Lots of soft fades, lots of close-ups of orgasm faces.
It's yeah. Great. It's a really good, I mean, listen, just like the most wonderful cheesy 80s sex scene.
It's great. It's,
I mean, listen,
Oscar worthy.
It's fitting that this guy also directed Top Gun, because that also has a very cheesy 80s sex scene.
He had a niche.
Once again, we're just finding the connective tissue with this man's films.
He had a niche, and he's fitting right in there, and good for him.
He's like, if I'm going to make a movie, it is going to have, like, a really, like, sexy, intimate, like, jazzy sex scene
jazzy.
With, like, soft fades and close-ups of orgasm faces and stuff.
Good for him.
The one in Top Gun was straight, though, so this one's automatically better.
This one's better, yeah, because it's two women.
And I love it for them.
Good for them.
Good for them. Bad for them, but good for them.
Bad
you know?
For them, but good for them. Here's the thing. I'm going to say something, and I don't know if this is going to get me, like, canceled or whatever, but, like...
Speak your truth.
Gay representation, right?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, we've all heard of it. There's so much pressure these days for good representation. And, like, of course there should be. Like, but, like, the definition of good representation has gotten so twisted. I kind of appreciate a movie where a gay person is allowed to be terrible.
Yeah.
I think there should be more movies and things where people are allowed to be terrible. Because here's the thing, and I hate that I'm quoting a Tumblr post that I reblogged this morning, but, like, I think if you want queer representation and things, you should get used to queer representation that doesn't necessarily resonate with you.
Yeah.
Even though you might not like seeing queer people being terrible, there are people out there, queer people, real queer people in real life, who find meaning in seeing, like, terrible queer people doing terrible things and being able to be, like, messy and human and awful, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, to piggyback off of that point, I also find it kind of disingenuous when people act like this movie in particular is uniformly whatever bad representation even means. But, like, not for nothing, Sarah is also, she's bisexual, and she's not, you know, like, she starts off the movie as a good person. She is corrupted by the narrative, but, like...
Mm-hmm.
She starts off pretty good, and there's no implication that she is not bisexual at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
Once again, they did change that sex scene to be fully consensual. Like, there was no coercion involved. She wanted to sleep with Miriam. She even did the fucking, oh no, I spilled some sherry on my shirt, I guess I have to take it off.
Oh,
like, that
no.
That was on purpose. She did that on purpose.
That's me wandering around Dracula Fuck Mansion late at night, like, oh, I just washed my neck. I hope there aren't any sexy vampires around to come bite it.
It was just that.
As
that was
I,
very
like,
funny.
Brush my hair away from my neck yeah. and sort of pull my my billowing gothic heroine shift down my shoulders. Yeah. Oh, no.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, this is a movie that if you go into it wanting to read it in a bad faith way, you certainly can.
Yeah.
But I would encourage people who are inclined to view it that way to give it maybe another watch with open eyes.
Yeah.
Because Miriam as a character fucking fascinates me.
No, yeah, she's definitely, like, the most complex character in this film. Like, she's definitely the most interesting, although I do also like Sarah and John. Like, she is the one whose brain I want to pick.
Yeah. Again, like, we've talked about it earlier in the episode, but just, like, the idea that, like, what are her options here? Like, either you are alone for the rest of your life, or you're doing what she does.
Alone for the rest of eternity.
Like, yeah.
She's not going to die.
Yeah, she's going to be 45 forever. And it's just kind of this thing of like, yeah, maybe you think that, oh, you know, if I was in her shoes, I would just rather be alone forever than to subject other people to this horrible fate. But it's this thing of like,
would you though?
Yeah, if you were, it's very easy to say that when you're not her.
Exactly. It's easy to say that when that's not your reality. And like, obviously that's no one's reality because it's not a real thing that can happen. But trying to put yourself in her shoes is, I think, pretty tantamount to like reading this film in a more positive light.
Yeah. And it's also this thing of like, the movie implies she's been alive since at least ancient Egypt, if not yeah. earlier than that. That's a long fucking time to be by yourself.
That is thousands of years.
It's insane. Like, yeah, maybe you don't agree with her actions, but also, like, you'd go a little stir crazy if you were her. And you're lying like, if you think you wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
So yes, the decisions that she makes are wrong, and she hurts a lot of people. And she is punished for it, but it's also this thing of, like, you get why she does it.
Yeah. It's a...
It's not the right decision, but it is an understandable one.
She's the scariest thing that any literary analysis can come across, a sympathetic villain.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I just... Oh, God, I could write fucking essays about just this character. Like, she's so cool. She's so cool. She's just wonderful.
She is a girl boss. She is a war criminal. She's never going to die.
She's never
going
to die. She's going to be stuck in that fucking box forever.
Yeah.
Screaming for Sarah, who's off having sex with other people. Good for her. Good for her. Good for her.
A lot of good for her in this episode.
Yeah. And then it's this thing of like, well, now what are Sarah's options here?
Exactly. It's just
she
a cycle.
She waits 300 years and then withers away like John and all the other fucking lovers did, or lock Miriam in a box and go girl boss her way out.
Yep.
Like, again, Sarah doesn't make good or like moral decisions either, but again,
what are her options?
God, morality in this movie, so interesting.
Yeah. But, like, let's actually have the most bad faith possible take on it and be boring.
To be fair, it's really hard to, like, say intellectual things about this movie, mostly because the opening sequence has Bauhaus singing Bela Lugosi's Dead.
Yeah.
Like, the actual band.
Yeah, yeah.
Singing
the
their most famous
of this movie
song.
Fucks so hard.
They're not even credited as Bauhaus. They're credited as, like, disco band or something.
Oh my God.
In the credits, which is very funny.
That's... Sorry, boys.
Sorry, boys.
Sorry, lads.
That scene was also filmed in an actual goth club in London called the Bat Cave.
Oh my God.
Which was, like, one of the most popular, like, London goth clubs. Like, that was where the cool goths went in the 80s.
I love that. Oh,
so that's fun.
Oh, to be there.
This movie was mostly filmed in England, which is funny.
That is funny.
Because it takes place in New York City.
It's like how Saw was filmed in Toronto. Like, all of the Saw movies
That's
were filmed in
crazy
Toronto.
To me.
All of the Saw movies were filmed in Toronto, and Tobin Bell and Shawnee Smith would, like, walk the fucking streets of Toronto talking about their characters.
Bless their hearts.
Bless them. We'll get there. Well, we have to get back to the fucking Saw movies, dude.
We do. We need.
We dropped off after the first episode.
Anyway. I think that's all I have.
Yeah. That's all I've got, too.
Watch this movie, guys. If you are not, like, set off or triggered by any of the things that we mentioned in the opening, give it a watch, because it's a really meaningful film with a lot to say, and,
It's also a really sexy 80s vampire movie.
We've discussed the sex scene, but, like, it's so goth in the best way.
It's so goth and sexy, and it's also very meaningful and has a lot of things to say.
Like, so it's the best of both worlds.
What more could you ask for, honestly?
Truly. Would you like to read some Letterboxd reviews?
Taylor, I would love to read some Letterboxd reviews.
Okay. First review, coming to us directly from a friend of the pod. Rhea from the podcast Ether and Ichor, who we love.
By the way, if you're into, like, vampires and you want to know more about, like, you want to hear people say, like, really smart things about vampires, Ether and Ichor's entire first season is all about different, like, iterations of vampires and vampire lore and stories about vampires. Please give them a listen. They're so good, and they have a lot of smart things to say.
Yes, absolutely. She also has funny things to say on Letterboxd, including this review of The Hunger, which says, "Not the editing choices I would have made, but then again, I'm not on coke. 4 stars.
Yeah, this is such an 80s movie.
Yeah.
Such
an 80s which is, that, Jimmy, that's such a nice way to say that everyone involved in this film was on a lot of cocaine.
Oh, absolutely. So much cocaine. So much.
1313 Tony the Terror, I love that username.
Incredible.
Says, "I dare say that if Catherine Deneuve and David Bowie approached me and invited me to be a part of their eternal vampire existence, the answer would be a resounding yes. And if they approached me only to seduce me, pleasure me, and kill me for my blood, the answer would probably also be a somewhat less resounding, but also undeniable yes."
Yeah.
4.5 stars.
This person understands.
I agree.
They understand.
I concur. Warp says, "This is how you combine goth and swag." 3.5 stars.
So true.
I loved this one. Ford said, "Someone had an obsession with billowing sheet curtains." 4 stars.
Billowing sheet curtains and doves.
And doves! So many doves!
There are so many doves on this set.
So many doves. And it's wonderful. I love it. "Can you believe that a movie as cheesy as this sparked our first smart people discussion since Us?"
Is it really?
Yeah, I think so.
Huh.
Audience, check me on that if I'm wrong.
I feel like we had another one, but keep reading, I'll look.
Art says, "Would react the same way if I was just vibing and suddenly all my exes showed up at the same time." 4.5 stars.
I think we had smart people things to say about Carrie.
Yeah, no, actually, yeah, we did.
And also Halloween.
Yeah.
We definitely had smart people things to say about Halloween. Do we have smart people things to say about Mulholland Drive? I think we did.
I think we did too.
Definitely did not have smart people things to say about Werewolf by Night. That was going crazy over.
That was a vibes only episode.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we had a few, but this is significant because it's about gay vampires.
Yeah. Gay vampires, always a fruitful ground for a very good discussion. Cherry says, "The second Bela Lugosi's Dead started playing, I knew I was going to love this." 4 stars.
Correct.
James, not James from Ether and Ichor, a different James, says, "MAGA, make America goth again." 4 stars.
So fucking true. So fucking true, and we start with the Hot Topics.
Exactly!
We gotta get the Funko Pops and the Squishmallows out of the Hot Topics. We gotta put the spiked bracelets and the ripped fishnets back in.
Yes. And if you just go, we have a petition. No, I'm kidding.
No, we don't.
We don't. But I'm sure there is one out there somewhere. Maddie says, Friendship ended with tight and coherent storytelling. Now pure vibes is my best friend. 4.5 stars.
We on the Final Girl Files podcast are heavy supporters of vibes-only cinema.
This one made me fucking cackle. So Vita Brava says, my, parentheses, 4000F, submissives, 1800M, 1600F, 1400M, 1200M, 1000M, 600F, 200M, have unionized.
Oh no! That's so good!
That's one of my favorite fucking Reddit posts!
That's so good.
My subs have unionized! This is, at its core, this is a movie about a woman whose subs have unionized.
Truly. They should put that as the synopsis and nothing else.
Just that review. That's also, never mind. That's also what kind of the plot of Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah. I hate that you said that, but yeah.
Ellie says, regardless of art or style or cool editing, this is a film about Susan Sarandon ghosting David Bowie and then fucking his wife. 4 stars.
Good for her.
As she should. Girl boss.
Girl boss. War criminal.
I fucked your wife, shit lips. That's all the reviews I have. What's your star rating for this film?
I give it 4 stars. I think it's a good fucking movie.
I'm gonna give it 5 stars.
Yeah, I understand that.
This feels like, again, this feels like a very targeted attack. This film.
It is for you.
You know, Tony Scott didn't know this at the time, but he did make it for me.
He did.
He saw into the future and he knew that it's the same thing with the writers of Dracula 1972. Like, they didn't know it at the time.
They were all at the same, like, seance where they all, like, had this collective vision of you.
Yeah.
And were like, we need to make a movie for vision. Her. Vision. Yeah. Vision. Yeah, vision like him.
Yeah, like,
because we haven't talked about Paul Bettany enough in this fucking episode, Taylor.
You know, like, the guy?
Yeah, I know. I know him.
You know, like, he's like Blurbo, like Blurbo from your shows?
Like Blurbo from, like Blurbo's husband, yeah.
Oh, man.
I hate this podcast.
This is a shockingly Paul Bettany-centric episode of The Final Girl Files for a movie that has nothing to do with Paul Bettany.
We haven't even reached our WandaVision special episode, which was going to happen at some point, I guess.
God.
That's going to be an episode, listen.
That is going to be an episode. No, I'm not going to say it.
Well, now you have to.
WandaVision in its own way is also about a woman whose subs have unionized.
Oh. All right, we're done. We're done.
We're done here.
We're done here. Next week, we're watching 2023's Skin and Meringue.
We are.
Please, for the love of God, if violence against children and children in peril is not your thing, please don't watch this movie.
I mean, what if it is your thing?
I mean, if it's really not your thing, if it is genuinely extremely distressing to you.
Whose thing is it?
You know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Okay, I'm still reeling from what you said. Let me live, okay?
I know what you mean. I just wanted to give you a little bit of shit.
Oh, was telling me that WandaVision was about a woman whose subs have unionized just not enough for you? Is that not enough for you? Listeners, if you want to hear more of Taylor giving me a hard time, you can follow us at FGFPod on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, I guess. And if you like what we did here, if you like listening to Taylor give me a hard time, you can give us 5 stars on or Spotify, do whatever it is you do on your podcast platform of choice to let us know that you enjoyed hearing Taylor shatter my psyche. And we'll see you next time for Skin and Meringue. Goodbye, everyone.
No. Listen, here's the thing.
I'm not listening anymore. Goodbye.
Oh, bye.